You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain.
This is
Sparta, Part 2. The movie 300 and the real history of the Hot Gates. The 2006 film 300 had a significant impact on the minds of many young martial artists. Last time, I discussed why the depiction in the film of the Spartans as admirable and of the Persians as totally evil was misleading. Today, I want to discuss misconceptions that the film fosters about the real history of the Battle of Thermopylae, so far as we know it, and the real martial abilities of the Spartans and of the other Greeks. One misconception fostered by the film is that the 300 Spartans defended the pass alone. The Spartans did play a leading role, but with a supporting cast of more than 6,000 other Greek soldiers from a variety of city-states like Thebes, Thespiae, and Phocis. It's not even the case that the Spartans were always in the front line in the battle. On the contrary, they rotated in and out of that position with their allies. In addition to the presence of these allies, the Spartans brought along 1,000 Helot slaves as well. So when you see the scenes in 300 where the noble Spartiates are marching north to battle, alone, the reality was that they had more than 3 times their number of slaves in tow, carrying their shit. What shit, you might ask? The Spartans in the film are practically naked, wearing creepy-looking jock straps, sandals, capes, and helmets, and carrying only shields, swords, and spears. The depiction of the Spartans fighting without wearing body armor is another misconception that the film engenders. The Spartans truly were some of the finest heavy infantry in the classical Mediterranean world. Part of that greatness lay in developing the strength and endurance to fight while wearing and carrying 70 pounds of bronze, wood, iron, and leather, including breastplates and greaves. Greaves were bronze shin guards. The Helot slaves would have been responsible for carrying most of that gear, as well as the food and other supplies, on the march to the north. Once at Thermopylae, the slaves were given weapons and a place in the battle line. In addition to being around to do the dirty work, the Helots were also expected to swell the ranks as cannon fodder, or more precisely, as arrow fodder. Now you might ask the question, if the Spartans were so worried about a slave uprising back home, why would they give the slaves weapons? Well, don't forget that the families of the Helot slave soldiers were still back in Sparta, under the watchful eyes of the Spartan secret police, the Cryptea, who would have had no problem with slaughtering those beloved families in lavish, bloody fashion, if given a hint of a reason. Another misconception the film creates is that the rest of Greece, outside Sparta, was militarily incompetent. As a matter of fact, the very reason that the Persian Emperor Xerxes was invading with an enormous army and navy was in revenge for the fact that the Greeks, without the Spartans, had already defeated an earlier Persian invasion 10 years before at the Battle of Marathon. Yes, that's where we get the name of the foot race. This earlier invasion was attempted by Xerxes' daddy, the Emperor Darius. Having been taught of this defeat as a young boy, Prince Xerxes grew up with his panties in a bunch regarding the Greeks. The Spartans never made it to the Battle of Marathon. Well, at least not in time to make any difference. They had promised to send troops, but when the Persian army showed up, the Spartans were as yet nowhere to be seen. Non-professional citizen soldiers from Athens and a small sprinkling from a town called Plataea attacked and defeated the Persians well before the Spartan reinforcements finally did arrive at the battlefield. Now, as is accurately depicted in the film 300, the Spartans had a low opinion of the military capabilities of the non-Spartan Greeks. The arrogant Spartans, upon arriving at Marathon and hearing the news that non-professional citizen soldiers from Athens had defeated the forces of the vaunted Persian Empire by themselves, refused to believe it. They actually insisted on physically walking up and down the length of the battlefield to inspect the evidence before conceding that such a thing was indeed possible. Despite the self-deception of the closed-minded Spartans, the military superiority over the Persians rested not so much in Spartan soldiers and tactics, but in Greek soldiers and tactics in general. You see, over the couple of centuries before the Battle of Marathon, the entire peninsula of Greece, with all of its various city-states, had gradually developed a technology and a type of soldier new to the world, and that development profoundly changed warfare. The new technology was functional bronze armor, and the new type of soldier was the armored heavy infantryman, in Greece called the hoplite. A hoplite wore and carried 70 pounds of armor and weapons, which required some training to pull off, and fought in a tightly organized and highly disciplined formation with other hoplites, called a phalanx. Up to that point, infantry wore either no armor at all, or wore very tightly woven cloth, or leather, for protection. The new bronze armor and tactical doctrine made the phalanx into a force multiplier, allowing it to face and defeat much larger formations of lighter infantry. Heavy infantry would go on to dominate battlefields in the Mediterranean and Europe for the next 1,500 years, and it all started in Greece. Yes, the Spartans were the best of all Greek heavy infantry at the time of Thermopylae, but the truth is that any competent group of Greek hoplites was more than a match for an equal number, or even more than an equal number, of infantry from anywhere on the planet at that time. As I said, one of the reasons that heavy infantry was so effective was the discipline of the formation. King Leonidas, yes, that's how his name is actually pronounced, even discusses this concept in the film with the poor hunchback Ephialtes, paying lip service to the importance of staying in formation and protecting the man on your left with part of your shield, which was all correctly stated. And in the first battle scene in the film, the Spartans are indeed depicted at Thermopylae following fairly proper heavy infantry doctrine. But then, in virtually all the subsequent battle scenes, they jump out of formation at the first opportunity and begin fighting as individuals, failing to protect their comrades and acting as if they were in an ancient Greek kung fu movie. Full disclosure, I should point out that despite the ridiculous nature of these fight scenes, they did give my colleague from the Inosano Academy, Damon Caro, a sweet paying gig as stunt coordinator. Since I mentioned King Leonidas, let me point out a misconception that the film engenders about him. The movie begins by showing young Leonidas going through the horrible rigors of the agoge, the training that young Spartan soldiers endured to become elite heavy infantrymen. This is depicted to illustrate that in the Spartan society that the film wishes to portray, the king was no better than his men, and must do everything they did. But Leonidas would almost certainly have not gone through the agoge. Members of the two Spartan royal families were exempted from the brutal beatings, privation, and near starvation of this education process. Getting back to the actual Battle of Thermopylae, which by the way translates into hot gates in English, the Greeks held solidly against the Persian attacks for the first 2 days. The narrow confines of the pass were perfectly suited for their style of combat. Persian military technology, tactics, and doctrine had no answer for Greek heavy infantry with no flanks to go around. But then the Greek position was compromised when a local man, not a disgruntled, misshapen hunchback of a Spartan, just a garden variety, everyday local dude who, for a bag of gold, sold out the Greeks by revealing a path around their rear to the Persians. When Leonidas received word that the Persians were in the process of moving behind his formation, he knew that all was lost. There was still time to withdraw, but he elected to stay anyway and fight to the death. Of course, the 1,000 Helot slaves, who had no choice in the matter, also stayed. But so did a significant number of other Greek hoplites. The rest of the Greeks retreated so they could fight another day. The remaining 1,500 or so, not 300, fought on until death or capture. There you have it. I hope this gives you a better picture of what actually happened at the Battle of Thermopylae. Your admiration should not be for the Spartans alone, but for all the Greek hoplites that came from a number of different cities, and for their discipline and courage in the face of an enormous Persian army. Next episode, I'm going to discuss the creepy racism of the film 300. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, and check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.